This is continued from side one now. Mr. Gronseth is talking about his jobs in the summer, and he had a stand in Sutton's Bay where he sold hamburgers and cigarettes and candy and etc. He sold most of his things to pickers. Could you tell me where the pickers came from? Were they kids from around the area, or were they Mexicans like they are today from the
valley? Neither. They were basically transients, whom we used to refer to as hobos. Now, the railroad operated back at that time, most often in the summer. We had two round trips a day from Traverse City up to Northport. And we were in this thing called the Depression, so that you had a very large number of men that were not tied down to a family. I got to know some of them when I was picking cherries. A lot of them had just skipped out on their homes because they had no real way to support a family. Some of them maintained their family and used the picking of fruit and vegetable. They'd start out in Texas and work the crops coming north. But I have seen days when riding on top of boxcars and in empty boxcars and riding the rods, which are those diagonal support rods underneath the car, where 300 and 400 men would come in at a time. And, of course, the trees were bigger back then. You'd get a cherry tree that would have 24 to 30 lugs on it. Well, if you figure the typical person may be picking 25 to 30 lugs a day, not having the best picking, that meant that one tree could occupy one picker all day, and you needed a large number. There were also a large number of blacks that came in at that time. There were very, very few Mexican. They did not start until after World War II, coming in as pickers. But the streets would just be jammed with people, and Sutton's Bay tended to be the shopping center. I think one of the reasons that Sutton's Bay did not develop into as much of a private resort area as Leland and Northport and Glen Arbor was that people traveling up into this area in the summer, which was really an eight-week period, July 4th to Labor Day, was about your summer vacation, and they'd be rather turned off by the sight of all these hundreds of pickers that would be in town afternoons and evenings, and particularly on rainy days. And so the Northport and Leland did not become the shopping center for pickers and remained more exclusive.
What year did you get into World War II? When were you drafted?
Well, I was in college, went to college in 1939, and a war broke out. It happened to be at a time when I was in Detroit working at the state fair just to pick up a few extra dollars before college started, the 1st of September. And we did not, as a nation, get into the war actively until Pearl Harbor, 1941. So the year of 1941 was my junior year. And I was already in what we called advanced ROTC at Michigan State, ROT standing for Reserve Officer Training Corps. The war, of course, intensified, and I volunteered to enlist in the Army in March of 1943. Failing to do that, I would have had to have dropped out of college and just gone into the draft. By volunteering, I could then stay the additional 3 months or spring term and graduate as I did in June of 1943. I was in my second year of advanced ROTC when the announcement came that because the reserve officer group as a group had proved to be quite inadequate because of insufficient training, a decision was made that all of those that had 4 years of ROTC would be required to go through regular basic training. And that was not just at Michigan State, that was nationwide. So I did basic training over in Camp McCoy, Wisconsin. And then if you completed basic training, you were guaranteed an opportunity to try out for OCS, which was Officer Candidate School. Well, I completed basic and then went to Infantry Officer Candidate School, Fort Benning, Georgia, and completed that on the 13th of December, which was a very important day because Congress, by an act of Congress, that was the way the papers would read, you were made an officer and gentleman in the United States Army. I was married that afternoon to Eileen, who, with her characteristic Irish observation, said Congress made you an officer and gentleman in the morning, but I made you a man that night. We had another interesting one in terms of going into the Army. We graduated in June of 1943, I did. And we were in, those of us that had signed up like that were in uniform. They gave us, as I recall, 2 hours maybe from 11:30 in the morning after graduation until 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon to stop and have lunch with family and friends. My parents came to graduation. Then we were formed up in a military formation on the practice field by the music building on campus of Michigan State, marched out Harrison Road where a troop train was waiting for us and headed for Camp McCoy, Wisconsin. So there was not a great deal to celebrate at that particular period upon one's graduation.
What was your final rank when you were discharged?
I came out as a captain in infantry in January of 1946.
Could you tell us where you fought?
I fought all over. The combat phase was in Europe, and I went in on D+2 on Utah Beach in Normandy, and was assigned to the 9th Infantry Division, a division which had made the invasion in Africa around Iran and also in Sicily, and was the division that took Palermo, which of course closed the Sicilian campaign. And it was quite a shock to join a unit that had had almost a year and a half of combat experience. And I must admit that I was fearful because I thought, what would those men who have all that experience want of somebody who was without experience? I learned within the first couple of hours that it was a tremendous advantage to work with an experienced unit because your chance of survival was that much greater. But my particular regiment and my battalion attacked out the Normandy Peninsula to the very tip of it, to a little town of Joburg. I can remember as we passed the high ground south of Cherbourg, watching the attack go on in that city, which I later had occasion to visit in 1970. It was quite a grandstand seat to see naval vessels, battleships, right out of the biggest that we had, lie out in the channel and give fire support to infantry troops on the ground. And after we concluded the capture of the entire peninsula, the Cotentin Peninsula, which was an extension of the Normandy Peninsula, we reversed course, and I was in part of the attack staged to go in Saint-Lô in central France, and of course it was there that I was wounded 3 times within 3 weeks. I went AWOL out of the hospital the first time and got wounded again, and was a light wound. They removed a fragment from my neck, and I went AWOL again from the hospital after they took a fragment out of my leg. Lunch. The second time I went AWOL, I got shot through the leg several times, and that required hospitalization back in England. So I was flown out of a field hospital in Normandy back to Bromsgrove, England, just outside Birmingham. and was there for a period of about 2.5 months. I returned to combat in October and joined again my same division, same regiment, same company, just after they pulled out of the Hurtgen Forest. And at that period, we were then in the beginning of the winter campaign of 44-45, which meant that we were headed in an attack toward the Rhine River, and actually were attempting to cross the Ruhr River just outside of the German city of Düren when the breakthrough came that the Germans effected in December of 1944. And my division was part of the group that anchored the north hinge of the Battle of the Bulge. And then, of course, we attacked into the Bulge to relieve the positions the Germans had secured to our south. We went into a winter position in and around a very ancient and very beautiful vacation city in Germany of Monschau. I was up on the high ground in a town of Bitterfeld. And then in late January, the big jump-off came in the middle of a blizzard, but we were again headed east, and the attack line generally followed toward the city, modern-day city, and the capital of Germany, of the city of Bonn. In fact, we were scheduled to attack that city and were maybe only 12 to 14 kilometers from it when the word came that the bridge at Remagen was still standing. So we swung to the south about 35, 40 kilometers, and I was in a part of the lead attack group that secured the high ground on the east bank of the Rhine at Remagen, and then went on eastward through cities of Kassel below Strasbourg, and ended combat actually in a German city on the Mulde River of the town was Bitterfeld. I think I mistakenly said by Monschau was Bitterfeld. We were in the little town of Mützenich up above Monschau. Bitterfeld was the end of our campaign. But I had the privilege of leading the patrol that met the Russians on up on the Elbe River at the city of Wittenberg in very late April or early May of 1945, and was at that time a company commander of a heavy weapons company.
How long did it take for you to get out of the Army?
Oh, that was a tedious thing. We, after combat was over, went down and occupied. Our division had the occupational duty from the south city limits of Nuremberg to the north city limits of Munich. And my particular battalion was stationed on the Danube River, a very, very lovely city of Ingolstadt. And drawing garrison duty is not fun when you come out of combat. And many things at this time and tape are not going to allow, but basically I volunteered my entire company for guard duty and damn near got shot in the process because it looked as though the other companies were just going to be able to play ball and play cards and shoot craps and whatnot. And I reasoned that no way was the United States Army going to let anybody sit, and I was right, because units that were not on duty were reassigned to basic training. But the thing that caused me to leave the division, as a company commander during combat, you had what was called responsibility for men and property. And in peacetime, unit commanders had accountability, which meant that financially, if something was missing, you had to pay for it. And of course, we had the biggest bunch of looters and thieves that you can imagine. That same day that that word came down, they sent down a list that said if you signed up to go to combat in the Pacific Theater, you would be guaranteed 30 days through the States. I signed. In fact, I think I was the first one in the division because I wanted to get back to family and Eileen and pretend that we were a couple of lovers. But the atom bombs dropped and short-circuited that, and that created a great deal of confusion. And where I was scheduled to go back in July of 1945, I did not get home until Christmas Eve of 1945.